Well, we appreciate you dressing up. You have your nice sports jacket on, but you might want to take it off because you just sat on
the hot seat.
Oh, hope you're ready.
I'm ready. Oh.
Excellent. Do you have a book and or podcast recommendation for us? We get a lot of interesting ones here, so.
Sure.
And a lot of not interesting ones, too. No pressure.
Hopefully this one's interesting. It's actually a fairly new book. I think it came out about a month ago. It's The Urbanist, Dan Doctoroff and the Rise of New York.
Oh, cool.
So that was just published, like I said, maybe about a month ago. I have not gotten all the way through it, but it is again, for people who are fascinated, A, with New York, and B, all at the intersection of all of these different disciplines that we've been talking about today. I think it is a fantastic book that really tells the story, obviously, of Dan Doctoroff and his contribution to New York City, but it also tells you a lot of what was going on and how we got a lot of the amazing progress done over, you know, during his tenure and even after his tenure. What's interesting is embedded within the book and the story is you understand about his leadership style and how that has continued on, right? Even after he stopped being the deputy mayor and moved on and did different things, like his leadership style, right, has been sort of infused in a lot of us and carries on to this day and helps drive a lot of the work and advancements that you see in the city. So I think it's a fantastic book. Continuing, I have not completed it yet. It's very thick and long and it's very enjoyable. So there's a lot to get through, but I would recommend it.
I love it. My whole family's New York family. So the more I learn about the city, it's a fascinating city. What is your most, you spoke about Willis Point and some other deals. Like, what is your most memorable deal? Doesn't have to be a big one.
You know, maybe I shouldn't have given that answer before, but I would say Willis Point. Look, I'm fortunate because of the work that I've done in the city. So, you know, there was an old parking garage in Long Island City, which is now known as Gotham Center. And it's amazing to see that, you know, even the projects that I do today, walking around, I mentioned Williamsburg houses, you know, going to these different NYCHA developments. It's just amazing to see the transformation. Back in the day, I worked on Kaufman Astoria Studios and their expansion.
Oh yeah, I worked with them.
Oh, cool.
Too.
There's this great breadth of projects across the city that it's just amazing to be able to see and be reminded of as I, you know, walk around the city and the like. But I would say again, the one that was most transformational, I think, from both a professional standpoint but also a personal standpoint, was Willits Point.
That's awesome.
You guessed it. So. I assume you've done a tremendous amount of hiring in your time. Is there anything in particular that you look for or any interesting questions that you ask when you're interviewing folks?
Sure. It's a couple of things. One, I like to understand the story. Where are you coming from? Where do you think you're going? And how does this role, and in this case, NYCHA, how does it fit into where you're, like that whole arc? I one of the things that I'm very much focused on as a general matter, like in any role that I've had when I've hired, I like to, you know, build teams that surpass expectations. So whether it was, again, working on Willits Point or the BQX or anything, I almost now get a bit of a thrill when people say it's impossible, because then I like to put together the team that can actually defy the odds. So, you know, again, I think in the case of what I'm doing right now at NYCHA, the odds are, you know, stacked against us. So how do we put together a team that is going to outperform and exceed expectations? So I think it's important to assemble a group of people who are going to really be very clear about, in this case, why they're coming to work in the real estate group. Why is it that they're interested in NYCHA? You know, do they have the, it can be a frustrating job, obviously, as you might imagine. Both internally and externally. So do you have the, you know, the either stubbornness or fortitude, however you want to view it, to put up with those frustrations and power through every day? So I really like to understand the story of why. The other piece is, I'd like to think of the real estate group at NYCHA as, frankly, a little startup, right, within this big, massive agency. And we've cultivated a little startup sort of mindset and culture within the group. And so I look for people, frankly, with an entrepreneurial mindset, which I know might seem a little absurd because we are absolutely not, you know, we're not a business at all. But I think bringing in those types of mindsets around, you know, perseverance, you know, problem solving, having a sense of ownership of the work, right? All of those characteristics I am looking for. And I think part of it comes out in the story, right? The why are you coming, or why are you interested? And I think, you know, obviously I like to test people and have them give me specific examples of when they can demonstrate these different characteristics. And to the extent that they can, I think we have, you know, we've ended up picking some pretty good people. And I think we've been fortunate. You know, one of the things that's interesting is when I started, it was a very small group. There might have been about 15 people. But the funny thing is, I had a ton of vacancies in the department. There was something like an allocated headcount of almost 40 with a ton of vacancies. And that's just a reflection of, you know, there had been some turmoil over the last few years, and a lot of people had cycled through my role. And so roles were not backfilled. So I was somewhat lucky because I was able to go on this hiring binge. Headcount that I was already given, it just wasn't being utilized. So we were able to put together a pretty amazing team. And this is why, you know, in 2023, we've got 37,000 units like churning through the PAC program, which I don't think anyone expected would have been possible in 2019. But again, it's bringing together a group of people, you know, who are so focused on the goal.
It's awesome. And this is the Impact Real Estate Podcast. Do you have any mentors that have had a great impact on you that you'd like to give a shout out to?
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's probably a lot of mentors who did not know they were mentors. I don't know that I've formally like ever had like a formal conversation where we identified each other as mentor and mentee. But
I'm Lisa's formal mentor, formal mentor.
Yeah. But you know, I would say, you know, when I think back again to the EDC, Bloomberg, you know, one person who I worked a lot with, who certainly trained me, pushed me, and perhaps did not know was a mentor, would have been Seth Pinsky, who was the CEO of EDC at that time. And certainly learned a lot of valuable lessons from him that served me well during my time at EDC and certainly continue to this day.
Well, you made it through the easy part of the podcast, Nikki. Are you ready to enter
the hot seat?
I'm ready.
Oh!
You feel like you're ready for anything.
I stay, like I say, if you stay ready, you ain't got to get ready, so I'm ready.
Love it.
I love that. You want to go ahead, Lisa, start us off?
So do you have a book and or a podcast recommendation?
Oh, you hit my sweet spot. Love books, love books, love books. But this is going to be a different one. Conscious Parent is one that I'm reading right now.
What is it called?
Conscious Parenting.
Okay.
Because I have two adult children. And any of us who have raised children, we've always said, well, no one gave us a handbook. I think that book should have been authored 100 years ago. But now that I'm dealing with my adult children, I'm learning. So reading that right now, that is a true gem. I will also
I was just going to say, tell me more. I need to know any good tips. I have almost adult children.
Yes.
Anything that really hit particularly resonated with you?
Oh my goodness. That the way that we were raised and our childhood trauma will impact the children that we have. And our children really are a mirror of us. And anything that's triggering us in those relationships probably have more to do with us than them. That's a highlight.
I agree.
Yeah. The other is The Nap Ministry by Trisha Hershey. It's called Rest is Resistance. I was introduced to that book last year, and it's really a manifesto for Black women explicitly to be given the permission to rest. without feeling bad about it or guilty about it. And really the rest is the resistance and really dismantling this, you know, hustle culture and this grind culture. And when I first got the book or got familiar with it, I said, I'm going to rest. But then I learned that resting isn't about escapism. It's about the ability to replenish so you can get up and do what you need to do again. And I think it was important to focus on Black women because, you know, whether, you know the quote of Malcolm X, that we really are the most unprotected group of humans on the planet, with many of us who have flourished in leadership, the challenges are much different than I think any others. And there's a lot that comes with us being, Black women. So that's another high regard. And of course, there's a lot of industry books, but those are the two that stick to mind right now.
I love that.
Me too.
Especially the first one. That was, I totally agree with that. All of us here have children on this podcast. What is your most memorable deal or maybe sort, maybe not intuition, what's the word I'm looking for? Something you put into place at Richmond.
I tell this story all the time, and I think this speaks especially to the point that was made, people coming into the industry. When I first came on board, like I mentioned, we had a portfolio of rentals. The organization had been dormant, so needless to say, many of them were in significant disrepair. So I was looking for money to try to repair them. And so I had heard about CDBG. At the time, I couldn't say CDBG. I was saying, I heard about this fund called CFPG. I didn't know the acronym. So I started calling the...
Like the eye chart, right?
Yeah. So I started calling the housing director in Contra Costa County, leaving messages, sending emails, and finally she replies and said, Nikki, it was clear you didn't know what you were talking about, but you were so persistent, we had to find a way to support you. So needless to say, all of our properties have now been covered under CDBG. To me, that was a win because I believe I was vulnerable, I was transparent, I was active in saying I needed support, and I didn't give up, and we got what we needed to get to the work done.
That's amazing. So it feels like you do a fair bit of hiring. Is there something in particular that you look for when you are hiring talent?
Well, I will say that I don't think what I have looked for in the past has served us well, and I'm going to validate that statement. I have wanted our organization to be a platform for individuals that would not otherwise have this opportunity in being in an affordable housing organization. So that means young professionals, that means people of color, really wanting to give them the platform to be engaged in the work. However, I underestimated that the infrastructure, support, and functionality of an organization is critical if you're going to bring on that type of talent. And as I had mentioned before, there was such extraordinary growth within the organization that, as we've heard and coined before, the plane was flying as we were trying to build it. So I don't think that we did a very good job of really understanding the needs. And that's why I said this year we're really taking a step back, because although I do want to provide a platform for professionals that wouldn't, quote unquote, have this opportunity elsewhere, I'm now taking full responsibility that the infrastructure has to be able to support, because I think people come in with great intent and aspiration, unfortunately, but if they don't have the tools to navigate and the tools aren't necessarily visible, it can be a challenge. So, but what I am looking for are people who understand that, people who are open to learn, people who see that I can provide value in their career, and people that can be fluid and flexible because things are changing every day.
What you mentioned your mother as being a mentor. Any other who have been one or two of your biggest mentors throughout your career in your life?
A woman by the name of Brenda Wright. She was with Wells Fargo for a number of years. I think this is a testament that when you see people doing the things that you want to do, you can excel. At the time that we met, I was working at a retail store mm-hmm. because, again, I said I didn't really have a vision of what I wanted to be when I grew up. So I went to the Fashion Institute of Design and Merchandising, and I was in retail. She happened to be shopping, liked the way I sold, and asked if I wanted a part-time job. She was managing a branch in West Portal Avenue in San Francisco. So I came in as a teller. I will say they quickly tapped off the teller line because I'm not operational. But just being able to see her every day showing up as a leader, as my branch manager, I was like, oh, I want to do that. So, you know, left Wells Fargo, went to Citi. Then I had two mentors, Herb Myers, who was an area director at the time, and a lot of his, you know, messaging still comes through my ear today. Laura Bramani was also a strong mentor of mine, and someone we lost, David Jones, was another mentor. So much like I referenced, my childhood birth to eighth grade was magical. I can transition that to my professional career. The first, I would say, 5 to 10 years of my career in banking, I had a very solid foundation working with really solid people that gave me the instruments and tools that I needed to be able to transform it into the work that I'm doing today.
We don't do any of this ourselves, right? We don't do any of this ourselves, right?
Exactly.
Well, you look very comfortable there, Johnny Shine. But are you ready to enter the hot seat?
The hot boom.
Oh, go ahead, Lisa. Question number one.
Yes, sir.
Question number one. Do you have a book or podcast recommendation for the audience?
My favorite book, and it's a bit of an oldie, but is Travels with Charlie by John Steinbeck.
Oh, I don't know if I've ever read that. I do like Steinbeck, though.
He's a novelist, but this is not a novel. This is his adventure of taking what was a souped-up RV across the country to see the country in 1960. And he brought his wife's poodle with him, Charlie.
Oh, I love that.
And it's a great adventure because it kind of is that in-between phase of when, you know, the interstate highway system wasn't even 10 years old yet in 1960. And it's that transition period of when we became disparate, you know, different communities, small communities around the country, to when we got really interconnected through the highway system, and how in many ways our country became very homogenized. And it was that inflection point.
You know, my father was part of, did not go to Vietnam. He was built the interstate highway system during the 60s.
So. Yeah. So it's to me, it's a postcard from a different time.
I love it.
And it's, yeah. So it's sweet and sad. It's got a lot in it.
Just like, I'm trying to think of something funny to say. It's not happening.
You're not the stand-up comic.
It usually
Chris.
Comes out, though. It usually comes out when I start it.
It does.
Sorry. I think I stopped you in your tracks. You're probably going to say, you know, Mad Magazine or Far Side. No, there's another side, too, you know, to this.
So Lisa and I find I'm fascinated by people's routines and how they kind of like prep themselves for the day. And do you have a daily routine that you follow generally?
So I'm going to tell you this. Something new in the last year or two has entered my morning
Wordle.
Routine. Yes.
Really?
Yes. It really gets my brain working.
Oh, is that review? Okay, sorry.
Yeah, no, you are psychic.
That's awesome.
And every morning, my wife and I play Wordle together, and then we play Spelling Bee, okay?
I love it.
I mean, for the geeks in the audience, that's what we do. And other than the usual, take the dogs out to walk, make the coffee, read the news, but that's something that has sprung up, which I find which I find to be, I'm excited about it every day because it gets your brain, you got to get your brain moving right away.
I think this happens to a lot of people. Like I was at the NAIOP SF San Francisco Best of the Bay Awards last night, and I was on the elevator with somebody, yeah. And he was saying that, yeah, how Wordle is like the thing, his daughters are in college, and he's like, this is the only thing my daughters will text me about is like Wordle. And like, it's the same thing with my parents. Like I don't want them to text me about anything but Wordle. Like anything else, tell somebody else, but I want to hear your Wordle.
Right now, currently I'm on a 10-day streak.
Good.
I mean, my longest streak was about 200 days, and then, you know.
Yeah.
Life happens. It all went to hell.
It does. Life happens. I know. Yeah. Wordle
happens.
I'm a very bad Wordle correspondent. We have a Jackson Lucas Wordle group, and I sheepishly watch everyone else report it every day.
We let her in, and then she just bombed.
You know.
Here's a hint. It's only 5 letters, not 6, Lisa. I just want you to know that.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay, you're welcome. Yes.
One of the things we always like to tell people is having strong mentorship, sponsorship throughout your career is, I think it's kind of a key. So just wondering what if you've had any folks that you think kind of helped you to get to where you are.
It's gonna sound trite and cliche, but I'm gonna say my father.
I knew you were gonna say your father. I love that.
I joined his business when I was in my 20s, and you know, good, bad, and ugly. Working for your parents is never easy, especially now because he's 92 and he still advises me. He's not in the business or any way, but he still thinks I work for him. That's part of the problem.
Forever
I'm working for him, but he really has given me the guidance, the structure, the love, and the tough love that one needs. Not many people are lucky enough to have that in their lives, and I'm blessed on that level, just blessed.
That's great.
Well, knowing you have someone who is on your side, who no matter what wants the best for you, they might be tough on you, but that is a part of that in your corner. Yes. I find that is a phenomenal thing to have.
And there were other mentors along the way, but I would just say, let me leave it at that. I could get into other people, but it doesn't really matter. What? He's the prime one.
So there's a question. It's a little off. Usually we ask about, you know, how people interview and interview, you know, what people should do. What do you are like a master networker. What advice would you give somebody who is not a master, a great networker, who wants to get better at it?
Just be in the room. Just show up. Yeah. And you know, Woody Allen said 90% of life is showing up. And if you're in the room, ultimately and eventually, people will start seeing you in the room and know you're part of the room and know you're part of the fabric and know you're part of the community. And people will start reaching out to you. Doesn't mean you have to recoil in the corner. You can just stand in one place. Eventually people, you eventually meet people. It's the best way to connect. You can't connect by not being in the room.
Right. Yeah.
And I would just say, show up, just show up. You'd be prepared for surprises.
Yeah. Show up, drink a lot.
I wouldn't say that's the first thing. I would pace myself. Yeah. Okay. Just, you know, don't do, you know, double shots and go, hey, what's up? You know, I would just kind of ease into that part of it.
That's good. Yeah. Cause people, that seems to be everyone's biggest, like Lisa's great at networking. There's a few people that I find are really great at networking. People say I'm decent at it. I actually, I don't think I'm good at it, but
you're
people
great
say
at it.
I don't love it.
Well, I saw you at an event in Laguna Beach in January, and your style is much different than probably Lisa's style, but everybody has a different style, right? And just be true to yourself and, you know, own who you are, which is a hard thing to do when you're young because you don't even know who you are. Yeah. But there are certain elements of you that are going to be with you your entire life, and you'll find that if you're just being who you are, it'll work for you.
Thanks, man. That's awesome.
So
that's good advice.
So we come to the portion of the podcast where Chris usually does some fun voices, and I'm going to try my best to emulate them. But are you ready for the hot seat?
Yes.
Oh. So first question is, do you have a book or podcast recommendation to share?
Yes, and I love that you do this because I am obsessed with audio content. I love podcasts and audio books. So yes, I mean, I know this is a real estate podcast, so you know, you can have the typical real estate podcasts and those are great. So, you know, I like industry things like IREI, Juniper Square has a podcast, but then from other business type podcasts, I like How I Built This. And on like a more personal note, I love any type of true crime series. So yeah, any type of true crime. So I listen to a lot of that. I run a lot. And so when I'm running, I'm listening to either podcasts or books. And yeah, I'd say for books, my husband and I both love David Goggins' Can't Hurt Me. I think we walked away really inspired by that. So that's my recommendation.
I love that. I feel like we have a very similar, we have similar tastes in those things. So this podcast, we actually loosely based on Guy Raz's How I Built This, because I love the idea of, and the target audience really is young people who can listen to How You Built Your Career. And there are a lot of kids out there who don't have parents that are doing what they want to do or neighbors or whatever. So it's a really great way to kind of give that back. So I love How I Built This. And I love all the things you mentioned. So that's great. Next question is, what do you look for in hiring people? Do you have any kind of specific traits that you look for? And do you have any go-to interview questions?
Yeah, I wouldn't say I have go-to interview questions, but I really like to dig in and get to know people. So it's not just their skill set. I like to understand, like, I want stories that showcase that they're curious, and problem-solving centric. I like hearing someone who's got a good work ethic, who's focused on the customer. So, and the customer could be an investor, it could be your tenant, it could be an internal customer, but someone who's really focused on solutions. So I look for, there's not a question I ask, but I'll ask a lot of questions and have a lot of conversation around who they are, what they like about their job, what works in their current organization. And what I'm trying to hear is the things that don't work in their organization, are they part of the solution for? How, like, and I don't want to prompt that in an interview question, but what I'm looking for is someone who says, this doesn't work. These two departments don't work well together. However, I created this thing and this has really helped us. And I'm really proud of that. Like I'm looking for someone who's solution oriented and really solving some of the issues. It tells me a lot about them and their perspective. It's kind of like the glass half full or glass half empty, right? Like if someone sees the problem and focuses on the solve and the fix, like they're an optimist. They can get through tough times. That tells me a lot about someone versus just being in the complaint and not solving for it.
I love that. My mother-in-law always says, she's like, if you are the no person, get me to the yes person. Who's the person who's going to figure out how to get this to yes? So the creativity and the problem solving, I think for people listening, those are keys to success in life. So, and then the last question is, this is the Jackson Lucas Impact Real Estate Podcast. Are there any mentors that have had a real impact on you and your career?
Yeah. I mean, I've been fortunate enough to have a lot. And you know, this is one of those points I think is really good for young people. Like a mentor doesn't have to be someone who meets with you regularly once a month on a consistent basis. A mentor is someone you gain wisdom and knowledge from, who makes you better or questions you and, you know, has you thinking a little bit differently about something. I think early on at my career in the Irvine Company, I met a gentleman his name is Val Wheeler. He's no longer with us, but I learned a lot from him, and he took time to talk about real estate to me in a lot of different ways that were, you know, not work related. We ended up, you know, becoming really good friends. He and my husband would go on motorcycle rides together. And I think we were like you know, he had kids our age, so we were just like an extension. We didn't have family out here. He was new to, he and his wife were new to the area too at the same time. And, you know, I got to learn a lot from him and how he interacted with people and how he solved problems. And so I'd say he was pretty influential for me, but I've had a lot of people that have been, and I think it's just seeking out someone you can learn from. Again, mentors don't have to be this official, you know, title where someone has this like regular commitment, but you can gain wisdom from a cup of coffee with someone, you know, just, and reaching out to someone who does something that's really interesting.
Well, that's Anthony, right. you mentioned the weather there in New York and Florida, but are you ready for the hot seat?
I heard about this. Let's see. No, not really.
Yeah, I think you're ready.
Give it a towel, hat down, turn the fan on. Lisa, you want to start him off? But give him a softball, the first one.
I'll give you an easy one. Do you have any book or podcast recommendations?
Book? I like the, I think it's called the Coddling of America. I like that book.
Oh, I've never heard of it. What's that about?
It's about, I mean, like, you know, the kids are getting a little too nice treatment from parents and stuff like that, about like you just can't go to a park and hit yourself in a hammer anymore, they'll call an ambulance, like, you know what I'm saying, like something like that. I mean, it's a good book. And then, you know, and it was written by two guys that they're declared liberals, you know, nothing biased about public, like about like politics, which is good. And they're like, listen, everyone thinks we're like Republican, like right-wing guys, we're not. It's just like, we're liberal guys, we're Hillary Clinton, we like, but we just think people like, you know, a kid can't go walk in the street without a parent like grabbing them, like, are you okay? Like, you know, like, but if you want to send your kid to the store to learn how to be by himself for once, it's impossible. And it's crazy.
I have, so my kids are going, they're college age, and I've noticed like the parents in the neighborhood, they're like, you know what? I know my son is drinking, so I went to buy bagels so I could drop them off. I'm like, he can live. Like, yeah. Do they really need to like be out drinking and then you show up with bagels? Come on.
That's
like a bagel.
I know, it's
that was great. I was in my son just is 14 actually today, and today's his birthday. And so we were in New York last week, and he was, yeah, I was working one on one day, and he was walking around the city and stuff like by himself. And it was great to, like, he's gaining confidence and, you know, all that type of stuff to be just going around doing his thing. And it felt good to be like, let him do that, you know.
And that's what I think, that's what people are missing today. You gotta let him do that, and you gotta let, and like, listen, like, you can't just like, if you let him, like people laughing at, give my son like a little toolkit, like real tools, and he's hitting and he hits his hand, like, they don't know not to hit his hand next time.
Exactly. I
mean, if you don't do that, they're never gonna know. Like, kids won't know anything. They gotta, like, you gotta get banged up as a boy. Like, things happen. That's life. And like, you know, you gotta have everyone like a little bit out there doing what they want to do and take some chances. Right. And that's what I like that book. I do a lot. It was very interesting to read.
All right, we'll check it out. A lot of folks we speak to have some sort of like routine during their day. Is there something you do like in the morning or a night, yep, or something that like kind of keeps you on the beam, as they, yep, say?
Yeah, I wake up at 4:52 a.m. I come downstairs. I usually finish. I make breakfast for my kids. I bake them something or something like that. I leave it there and I go to I'm at the gym by 5:30.
Wow.
Every morning. Every on the weekend, sometimes I start at 6:30. It's the only difference. But what I do now, my off days, because I'm getting older, when I travel, I don't really work out. So when I travel for work, those are my off days.
It's hard to do that. Yeah, me too. My off days are, yeah, I have a hard time traveling. I found myself, I was fitting too much in, trying to squeeze everything in traveling.
Well, you're out of the routine, right? So if your routine is not going,
when I was younger, I would have probably tried to work out on the trip too, but it's like, you know, you need some time. Like,
yeah.
The older you get, the more time you need off. It's kind of interesting. It works quick. Like, and then you feel better when you don't work out. Like I didn't travel for like 3 weeks, and I, just because it happened, and like my elbow hurts. I'm like, why is this hurting? I'm like, it shouldn't hurt. And they're like, it's you know, it's fine because I didn't rest today. I mean, it's just simple. Like, you know, so you got to work in rest days. But that's my routine. Every morning is the same. I've been doing it for like, I mean, I really got into it about 6-7 years ago, and I haven't stopped.
Oh, cool.
That's phenomenal. So I'm sure you've hired a lot of people throughout your career. Is there anything that you look for in particular where you see, oh, this person has this trait, I think they're going to be successful over time? Any interview questions that you kind of like to ask?
I mean, a big thing is when they're currently employed, I ask, why do you want to leave the job you're in? I like that question. I know some people say don't ask it, but like I wanted to see, like, you know, you want to know why they're leaving, like, because you don't, number one, you don't want to repeat it, right? Number two, you want to say, like, are they just leaving because they want to look for more money and they'll do that to me? Like, that's something else, like, which is not a bad, listen, and that's not a bad thing either, but it's like, you want to know. So that's one question I always ask. And I, something that I like to see, they should be like, maybe I'm old school, it should be a neat appearance, like, you know, it doesn't have to be dressed up. But I, like, I don't want a guy in a suit come in the interview for like a, that's not totally necessary, but, you know, neat, well lit, in a place where they could speak to you. They should have the wherewithal to think that that's necessary.
Right.
And a lot of people don't. And it's you know, like, you're like, we interviewed one guy, he was like this on the camera. And all you saw was his head. And
oh,
I'm like, this, is there something, is he doing this on purpose? I asked, like, our HR person. I'm like, is there something, like, I don't get it. And, like, stuff like that, you can't, there's got to be, you know, you got to have some presence about you. You got to be like,
yeah.
I mean, I don't want too much confidence either, but, you know, you want that nice, well, reassured person who's neat, comfortable, and able to be in their own skin and speak. That's what you want.
Yeah, it's harder than you think sometimes.
It's almost impossible to hire people. You know,
it's
I have a lot to say on that if you want.
I do.
We have a lot of stories. We should do a whole episode just with the stories.
Just not hiring people. It's hard. It's a hard job market out there. And if you're a good employee, you should interview in a lot of places because a lot of good people want to hire you. Trust me. And it's hard to find really good people.
For sure. Now, like, what you mentioned, your father, what other people have had, what other mentors have had an impact on your career?
I mean, I don't want to sound like a story. It's definitely just him. I mean, he was the biggest. I mean, I worked with the guy 25 years of my 20s. You know, he was there when I was, like, in his position, he still would come in a couple of days a week and he was always there, you know? And I always used this, like, I learned from him and I learned from people on the job. I mean, it just, those guys were like, he was definitely a driving force behind what I know, and definitely in real estate development, construction, you know, entitlements, things like that.
What's his first name?
Tony.
Oh, he's Tony.
I'm a junior technically, but we didn't
really
have the same...
I swear I've spoken to him over the years.
I think I have as well. It's amazing.
You could have. My dad was, he was been around, like, he's been in the New York, like, real estate scene for like 60 years straight. It was like a long time. And from like 2000, you know, he was born in 29, my dad. He passed away in 2019. He was almost 90. I mean, and he worked from like 20 to 80, 88 constantly in New York somewhere. And I was like, he laid brick during the day and went to Columbia at night. You know, he was a bricklaying, like, in the Union, going to like an Ivy League school at night.
You should be proud.
Yeah.
They don't make them like that anymore.
There's no one like that. There's no one like that. I, you know, I always tell him, like, like, listen, you couldn't afford Columbia now on a bricklayer salary, so don't worry.
Oh, for sure.
No way. There's no way. I mean, like, you imagine if someone wanted to do that today, like some young hardworking kid, you couldn't even do it.
No.
There's no way. You'd be in debt your whole life trying to pay off the school. It just, that's what really changed. You know, people don't realize that's a big thing that changed in New York, especially, but the whole country. Like, back then, when a lot of it has to do with inflation, but we don't have to talk about monetary policy. But, you know, when money was on the gold standard, the wealth gap wasn't huge because, you know, there wasn't as much money. So you couldn't be like, you couldn't have hundreds of billions of dollars. It didn't exist in theory, right? You couldn't make that much money. So, like, when that happened and the wealth started expanding, a guy like Lefrak and my dad became like Ether's apartment. Before, you know, he was a rich guy and he was a wealthy guy, you know, and that's how it was. Then the super rich and middle class. That's what happened, like, in 20 years. People don't realize that. That's how fast it was, you know?
Yeah.
My dad bought my house in Brooklyn from my grandparents for, like, $20,000.
Right.
Like,
wow.
You know, 20, like, that's not even, today you couldn't buy, like, a shed in the backyard.
Right, right.
It's just totally different. Like, that's how it was. And people don't realize that's a big change in real estate, especially. But in big urban markets, it's what happened was insane. And just from when I was in college till now, the stuff you saw trade, like, there's a building that I know I could have bought in college for like $900,000 that sold for like $27 million.
Right.
I'm not that old.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's not that much of a time to have that much appreciation in a value of something.
Well, with the shrinking middle class is like the big, you know, that's what's happening. And that's what happens in a lot of maturing countries. And it's like, how do we figure out to keep that? And like, thankfully your real estate seems to be helping with that. You know what I mean? Like with having those type of companies in there, and like, even like where I live like Silicon Valley, it's very, you know, it's kind of like the Westchester of where I live, the area. And like, you know, the cobbler, you know, this guy was here for a gazillion years. A cobbler just shut down like literally 2 weeks ago. And like all those people are kind of leaving, and where are they going? And are they going to come back up? And it's the little pizzerias and stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of what this, it's the big issue, and we're all trying to figure it out. I don't know the answer to it.
Yeah, and it's also sad, like you see like the first and second generation people where the kids don't want to do what they do, and you lose all those establishments, right? Like that happened in Brooklyn, all over Brooklyn and Queens and like the boroughs. Like, you know, Chinese food place, an Italian deli, something like that. The kids didn't want to do that. They went to college or became like a trades person or a cop, or they opened a business. No one wanted to repeat. Like it used to be like there'd be generations of the same business. That stopped in America, you know, because no one wanted to do like those kind of, where it's a lot of work for a nice salary, but it's not, you know, it's not like a 9-to-5 job. You're there all the time. You run a business. It's your business, you know. And it's sad that a lot of those left, you know, it really is.
Yeah, you live above the business and, you know.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, that was your house. That was your business. And you were like, that was your, you made your own destiny there. If you were successful, you were. If not, sorry.
I went to a deli in Hoboken the other day with my buddy, and it was Italian deli. And yeah, like the mom, like the husband and wife were the ones who worked there. And like, no, it was Emin, because but a lot of I used to live there a long time ago, and like a lot of the places that I used to go to are all gone now. There's like two on like there's two like what I would consider authentic Italian delis there, and it's gonna be gone soon. As soon as they stop working, probably be gone.
Of course,
so.
Right. As soon as they stop working, the kids aren't gonna do it. Or they'll sell the business to someone that's not those same people. That's a little deal. The kids aren't gonna repeat that. No one's gonna. I mean, listen, maybe that's the American way. They got a better life. They want to do a better life. They want to get educated. They want to do something else. And maybe that's the way it is, but it's also sad, you know. You don't get that authenticity of.
Well, I'm not going to get my fresh mutts, you know. I want my fresh mutts.
Exactly.
I worked at it. That was my first job at an Italian deli. I made fresh mutts. It wasn't fun. It's not a fun thing. No. It's not, none of that stuff's fun when you actually have to do it. It's not, you know, like I remember the guy's hands were like stone. He put him in the hot water. Nothing happened. I almost burnt my hands off. I felt like I was on fire. It's like, it wasn't a fun thing. I'll never forget that day in my life, man. It was like, it's like all that stuff. Like those guys, like they knew what they were doing. They had a procedure. You had to replicate it exactly, or you didn't. It wasn't the same way. It's,
right.
That's how it was. Yeah. And I worked there for a while. It was fun.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Resume, a Jackson Lucas podcast, where we take a deep dive into the career journeys of some of the top minds in real estate and equip you with the knowledge to move forward in your path towards the success you've envisioned. Visit us at jacksonlucas.com